Welcome to episode 16 of the Groups Matter podcast. I'm Brian Daniel, here with Small Group Ologist. Right, that was the title that I think a colleague gave you at one time, Rick Howerton.
Yeah, thrilled to be here. It's going to be a great day. We've got, you go ahead, you tell them.
Well, we've got Alan Taylor,
who is the new director of Church Education Ministries at Lifeway.
Brand new, just a few months into his tenure here at this time. And I met Alan. We did some work with – he was a contributor, a big part of the Disciples Path project. So I got to work with him a couple years ago, and he has been at First Baptist Church Woodstock, which is just a great church.
And he grew one of the greatest Sunday schools that I know of ever. So it's real exciting to have him.
And he is the director. He is the newly minted director of
Church Education Ministries.
That is his role. And then later on the show, we're going to have Rick's List, which looks like that's going to be quite the show with three types of new group members and how to keep them.
Interesting list, I promise. You'll be intrigued with the titles.
Yeah, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but those three types, some terms I have not seen from you before, Rick Howerton, I must say. And then the post of the week is Harry Pyle and Impact by a friend of yours, Mark Miller.
Yeah, Mark Miller is the groups guy at the Tennessee Baptist Convention. A genius when it comes to groups, been doing this a long time, helping churches in Tennessee, does conferences around the country for other Southern Baptist state conventions. Yeah, this is going to be good stuff.
And Harry Pylon, of course, is a legend. Legend in the Sunday school world, right?
Yeah, Mark is actually talking about some truths that Harry Pylon taught him that have been used by churches for generations. And I really, as I was looking for a blog post, I realized that Harry Pylon had actually given us a list of 9 objectives for group life that crossed the lines from Sunday school to small groups, any kind of group. So I thought it'd be wonderful to speak into that.
Timeless truths from Harry Pylon. That's
there
really
you go.
Cool.
Yep.
So we've got a great podcast. Before we get into some of the content, I wanted to ask you, we're moving deep into the fall, about the holidays and how you guys usually manage that with your group as you move into these, this 8-week period here.
Yeah, groups do various things. Some groups will begin talking about right now, and they need to begin talking about right now. What are they going to do the Thanksgiving week? Will they be taken off that week? Will they be getting together for a celebration? Will they actually come together maybe for a prayer time to pray for families as they go to be with families around the country that don't know Christ yet? They'll be having to make some of those decisions. So it'd be really wise for a group leader to begin to think right now, how do we want to handle the issues or the off time that we might be taking during the Thanksgiving holidays?
And so many special events on the church calendar during this season. So, you want to be wrapping up whatever, short-term or ongoing study that you're doing, depending on your group format, and be thinking about you're going to be getting together for special occasions and how that may marry with other things that are more ongoing.
Yeah, the season's ramping up. And just one other thing that came to mind, Brian, after I finished there, it would be wise for any group leader to ask their group members who's not able to go be with family. Mm-hmm. And if it's possible for them, they might do something for those folks who can't be with others instead of them being by themselves during Thanksgiving. And I can assure you, if they're willing and able to do that, it will make a lifelong impression on those people.
Absolutely. So, your family is becoming more and more extended. So will everyone be around? How do you guys do it?
Well, we're real blessed. My closest family, my two sons and their wives and children all live in this area. So my oldest son will get back from his in-laws probably Thanksgiving evening, and we'll celebrate the family together. So, how about yourself?
Yeah, well, very similar. All of my family is still in Western Kentucky, except for my immediate family, my wife and my two daughters. So we just go down there one day, and then we have everybody over to our house one day. It was kind of a few years ago, we decided we wanted to start establishing our own family traditions, and a tangent to the group conversation was trying to establish that break so we could have our own tradition, and maybe it was disruptive with some things that have been going on for decades within the larger family. That was not an easy conversation. But you know what? Once we got into it, maybe it wasn't as hard as what I expected it to be.
Well, there's always that transition. Every family goes through it. When does it happen is the question.
And you need to, really. You need to. It needs to happen. And I felt like we got to a point where I just owed it to my daughters, because they wanted, now that, you know, my oldest is at college, the youngest will be heading there soon, we need to establish our own kind of centrality for the holidays. So, yeah, that was – but it's good. It's good. All right, let's move on. So let's go with the post of the week. Let's see what Mark's got to say.
You know, Mark, he actually honored a great man who did a lot for groups. It was Sunday school at the time, but just groups in general. Some of those principles live on, as I mentioned. And Mark titles this particular blog, Harry Pyland Impact. He goes on to talk about how Harry Pyland served First Baptist Church in Houston as the Minister of Education before coming to what was then the Sunday School Board, what is now Lifeway, as the Sunday School leader for Southern Baptist, is what he talks about. And then he goes on to remind us that Harry Pyland wrote a book called Growing and Winning Through Sunday School. And in this, he unpacks the basics of Sunday school growth. And these are the 9 things that I wanted to verbalize, that I wanted our listeners to hear. Because I think while the terminology may not be the same as we use today, these 9 things are essential to having a growing groups ministry. Some will be tweaked a bit, and I'll even speak to a couple of these, but for the most part, these things must happen. First of all, make a commitment to grow. The person who spearheads the Sunday school or the small group ministry needs to say, I want to see this ministry grow. Then identify and enroll people. You're not going to get people to come join you unless you first identify who they are so you can reach out to them. Then he says, start new units or classes, whatever term you want to use. In my world, start new groups. And we know this. Anybody who's made a commitment to grow, identified the people they're going to enlist to be in groups, and then starts the new units that those people get into, it's going to be a growing Sunday school. Then you've got to enlist workers. Then you've got to train workers. I've said this before. I'll say it again. If there's one thing I'd love to pound into our listeners' ears, it's this. Never enlist a volunteer that you don't train. You'll either lose them quickly or they'll make bad calls and you'll have to deal with difficult issues. Then 6, provide space and equipment. Be certain that the space is workable, that they have the equipment they need. Now, in a Sunday school church, it's going to be in the building. In a home, even then, you need to make sure people have the space that they need, that their home is going to be conducive to the gathering. And then if they need money for childcare, if they need money to purchase curriculum, those kinds of things are necessity. And then he says 7, conduct weekly workers' meetings. Now, this was a different era, and even in most Sunday school churches, this is not a possibility. People aren't that apt to come as often. But I think we can see this as an important principle, the principle being continually train people to be even better leaders. Never leave them hanging after you've given them foundational training. They need ongoing training. Then conduct weekly visitation. What we would say today is continually invite new people, more so than go knocking on doors to invite people. And then finally, teach the Bible to win the lost and develop the saved. Now, those are old terminologies, but you can't beat that. We know that Acts 2:42-47, you know, kind of the first expectation is the apostles' teaching. We want to be certain that the Word of God is the centerpiece, because if we're helping people learn the Word of God, they will know the importance of winning the lost, and they will continue on the process of sanctification to become more and more like Jesus. These 9 principles, Brian, were written decades ago.
So I remember the last time that I was leading Sunday morning on campus groups, and we did not have the weekly workers meetings, but I have experienced those before. So you have talked about training, you know, and I think I've asked the question to you on a prior show just about how often that happens, and basically it was to have the big training. I think you're recommending at least one time, you know, every cycle, every year.
Yeah.
So how does this translate? I mean, the weekly touch, the weekly workers meeting, even though you're right, that doesn't, just the way we are today, and I don't know that physically that needs to happen as much as there needs to be some kind of communication. Have you seen that translate into today's culture?
Well, the weekly workers meeting, I think, had multiple important aspects to it. One would be to encourage your leaders so that they stayed in the game. Another might be to continue to cast vision for them. Some of the things he's suggesting, be sure that you're casting vision to continually be sure that you're reaching out to people who aren't in your group, people who are lost, the vision casting. And then also giving them the tools necessary, probably in his era, to teach a good lesson. That's where I think things have morphed quite a bit. We now have a people who are probably more well-educated than most then, and we also have a people who have access to training online. So while we may not be able to have a weekly training event, we may be able to connect them with video training that we ask them to go to. So for, you know, Lifeway has the ministry grid,
right,
where there are hundreds, maybe thousands of videos, and if a church subscribes, they can actually go to that website and assign specific videos that they can watch and learn from. Leaders can.
That's the Harry Pyland Impact by Mark Miller. That's the post of the week this week. Rick, thanks for bringing that. Before we get Alan in studio here, you like that? It's in studio. Boy, if we could see a picture of this, it'd be the last thing you think.
Yeah, you mean around this table?
Yeah, around this table. Before we get Alan here in studio, around this table, let's talk a little bit about what he's bringing to Lifeway.
Oh, Alan, first of all, he brings an incredible understanding of not just what it means to oversee a ministry, but to be a leader driving a ministry. And those are two quite different things. His years of experience will tell us again and again that when you have a question, he's probably going to have a good answer. You're also going to find he brings to the plate a humility. As he has mentioned to many of us on many occasions, he's always learning from somebody else. The best people are always doing that. So he's that guy that's taking notes when somebody else is speaking and learning from them. So he brings to the plate a plethora of years of experience, as well as a plethora of understandings that people can draw from.
And he's not only drawing from his experience as a church leader, he was also a high school football coach for several years, which I think gives him a perspective that you're going to appreciate. So let's get Alan in here.
I cannot begin to tell you how excited I am about Alan being with us today. Alan Taylor has been one of the leading voices in Sunday school for decades, having been at Woodstock Baptist Church in Woodstock, Georgia, but he is now here at Lifeway, which is thrilling for everyone here, but especially for me. Having him here working with education ministers is fantastic. I'm going to ask him to share a little bit more about his work. Alan, would you mind first of all, welcome to Lifeway.
Thank you very much, Rick.
Just thrilled you're here. We're thrilled that you've joined this team. Would you please take a second and tell everyone what your role is here and what you're most excited about?
Okay, it'll just take a second. I'm still trying to find out what my role is here.
I understand. Now,
I really am excited. My actual title is Director of Church Education Ministry, which it's a nice way to say I work with ministers of education, those that's over Sunday school groups, that kind of thing. And so, you know, to come and to be able to actually get paid to do what you love to do and what your passion is, I mean, I told my wife when we were driving up here to make the move, I said, you know, really, a person shouldn't get paid to do this job. I said, now, I paused and thought, and I said, you know, I believe I will take the paycheck, though.
Good call.
Yes, I think it was. But basically, to work with Christian educators and, you know, I realize, as I think about that, Rick, there's a lot of Christian educators that need to help me, not me help them. I mean, there's some great, great people out there. But after spending so many years doing it, you know, it's exciting to think that I get to hang out with my kind and with the people that have my passion. And I think it's just going to be a great ride. I'm very much looking forward to it, especially to get to work with guys like you. And, you know, I've met some great people here at Ridge, I started to say Ridgecrest, because that's where I know most of Lifeway people from, here at Lifeway.
Sure.
And just some meetings I've already sat in on, I'm very impressed with the professionalism and the expertise of the people in this building, and I'm confident I'm going to learn a lot from them as well.
Well, we're excited about your professionalism and expertise, and you're going to help a lot of people, Alan. Thrilled that you're here. I've said that four times, and I mean it. Love it that you're here.
Well, in addition to professionalism, I'm excited to have another person to talk about SEC football with.
There you go.
So, Alan, you and I met when you were in town for the Disciples Path meeting. Mm-hmm. I guess it's been about a year and a half, maybe it's like it'll be 2 years in January, right? In a couple of months. So, and it was during that time that I discovered that you have a background coaching. So I want to know, obviously, in the coaching world, that is, I think that may be one of the purest expressions of leadership, even though it's on the periphery and it's, you know, it's not life or death, as we know. You learn a lot about being a leader, making decisions and putting decisions in play and seeing them through and then seeing them and then seeing played out on this field of play. So from that experience, I'm wondering, what did you learn as a coach that can aid education ministers and small group pastors as they lead their ministries?
Okay, great question. And, you know, one of the things I used to say, you know, as a coach, you got 25 seconds to get a play called and get the ball snapped. And I've learned that it's much easier to call those plays when you're sitting in the stand with a hot dog in your hand.
Yeah.
Than it is when you're actually on the field. And, you know, it's really that way in real-life leadership. You know, people look back and it's very easy to be critical of a leader when you're not the one having to make the call. But, you know, one of the things that coaching did teach me is that it was my job to get the most potential out of the players. Now, every player didn't have the same potential. I couldn't go in and expect every player to give the same productivity, if you will, on the field as an athlete. But it was my job to get the most I could get out of that particular player. You know, I think that's a great word for Christian educators. It's our job to get the very best, all the God-given potential that a person has. It's our job to, if you will, coach them to the maximum of their potential. I have, over the years, used the parable of the talent to say, you know, when the Lord gave one guy one talent, one guy two, one guy five talent, we got some one-talent teachers. We got some two-talent teachers. We got some five-talent teachers. They're just not all the same. You know, we could say we got the one-talent group leaders, two-talent, five-talent. Mm-hmm. So one of the ways I looked at it at Woodstock was if a guy just had one talent of potential, it was still my job to get one talent out of him. If he had five talent, it was my job to get five talent out of him. So a coach is to get the most potential he can out of his players. And then the second thing is a coach is to put his team in the best environment conducive for success. You know, you can't block for him, you can't tackle for him, but it is your job by strategy, gaming, game planning, whatever, to position your player to do the very best and your team to do the very best that they could and to maximize the collective talent that you had on the field. And sometimes that talent wasn't as good, but nonetheless, it was your job to scheme and strategize to help your team win and your players do their best. And again, we go right back to church. I mean, it's the same thing. What does a leader do? He places his team in an environment conducive for success. And so whatever that looks like in every situation, it's going to be a little bit differently, of course. Now, let me just say a couple of the things, if I could, about that, Brian, because one of the things that you have to learn in coaching is the first rule of winning is don't beat yourself. Don't fumble. Don't throw interceptions. Don't get senseless penalties. You know, you just, at some point, there's some games you didn't, the other team didn't have to win. You so beat yourself that they did win. And I found that's true spiritually. I mean, oftentimes it's not the devil beating us. We're beating ourselves. So the first rule of winning is don't beat yourself. But the second rule of winning is to practice the basic fundamentals of the game. You know, in our case, we would know that would be witnessing. It would be making sure you have relevant biblical Bible study, you know, making sure that you're caring and shepherding your people. Just do the basic fundamentals. And it's amazing what you can do if you do fundamentals. It's good to be smart, but it's better to be fundamental.
Oh, that's good. That's strong.
All right. So why do you think so many group ministries are in decline these days? And what can be done about it? And I guess, you know, the answer is going to be a big part of the vision that you'll be developing here in your new role at Lifeway.
Well, you know, I think the reason so many groups are declining goes back to what we just said. They are beating themselves, and they're not practicing the basic fundamentals of the game of groups. I personally think the number one problem with groups in America is it starts with the enlistment process. We are not enlisting our leaders right. We don't enlist our leaders knowing the vision, Brian, of what, what we feel like is a biblical vision for what we're trying to lead. We place them in an environment that's not conducive for success because we've not even told them what success looks like. What are our expectations? What is a win here? And so the leader has to establish that. And so then you go on from not only enlistment, but then training. Again, a coach has to practice. And, you know, one of the things that everybody that teaches a Bible lesson knows this, you spend much more time preparing your Bible study than you do presenting it. A football team practices much more than they play a game. And so it's those same basic principles that we enlist right, we train right, and without those, we're not going anywhere. And then I would say another thing from the standpoint of groups that really is a burden for me that I don't have answers to this yet, but it's one thing I'd like to make a difference in at Lifeway. We have got to get evangelism back in group life. We have got to. I did a survey several years ago when I would lead conferences. I would simply hand out an index card, and I would tell these people who were leaders now. They weren't just people who were attending. I would hand them an index card, and I'd say at that top line, put the number one, and write down next to that, what is the number one thing that groups have to do if it can't do anything else? You know, whether it's a small group in a home, whether it's a Sunday school, it don't matter. Write down the number one thing that you have to do, the number one priority. If you can't do two things, you can only do one, what is it? And I'd have them write it in. Then I'd say, go to second line, write a two, and do the same thing. If you could do two things, not three, what is it? And then go to three. And after they did three, I had them turn them in. I collected several hundred of those after doing many conferences. And when I tallied those up, it came out very strong that the one and two purposes of Sunday school or group life was Bible study and fellowship. To be honest with you, whatever was number three, I really don't remember because there was such a huge gap, a chasm between two and three, it really didn't matter. And so, and I got thinking about that. Why do these leaders put down Bible study and fellowship? Well, first of all, I wouldn't want to go to a group that didn't have those two. They're critical. But I feel like it's a short-sighted vision. And so I got thinking, why is it that they have listed that? And the reason they listed it is because that's the two things they do when they meet. They have Bible study and fellowship, and it never goes beyond that. And so, you know, it was that time I developed a whole strategy at our church to try to say, because we were trying to say, here's the three things we want you to do. And so we made sure all three of those things in some way was massaged when we met. And my whole idea was there, it's out of sight, out of mind. And so I think that's happened with evangelism. They say most flat tires are a slow leak, not a blowout. Evangelism over the years has slowly leaked out of group life. And some way or another, we've got to get it hooked back up to that air compressor, and we got to blow some evangelism back in there because it's gone flat on us. And so I feel like that's another reason we're in decline. Bottom line is the way to grow is to reach people with the gospel of Jesus Christ, and we've got to get that back in.
I've been around Greg Laurie a little bit over the past few months, and one of the things that he said that stuck with me is evangelists make the happiest people. And that's something that we forget. If you're sharing the faith, if you're talking about Jesus with people, it has an effect on the inside. But I think in our ministries, in our groups, it's quite the opposite mentality. I mean, it's a 180 from that, I think.
Yeah,
Alan, I've got another question for you, but if Brian doesn't mind, I'm going to take a point of personal privilege. I've never done this. I'd like to do that. For those of you that are listening and you're a small group pastor or a small group point person, and you may be thinking, he's a Sunday school guy, I think you may have just heard nine of the most important minutes that you've ever heard when it comes to leading groups and leading a group's ministry. You got to be a leader. You got to focus on evangelism. Alan, thank you. That audience needs to hear that, and you said it so well. Let's keep in mind what Alan's saying. We got to work towards success, and success is seeing people's lives change through groups. So thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Last question for you, Alan. I want to give you a chance. Brian and I want to give you a chance to tell these folks what you're able to do for them now that you're full-time at Lifeway. You've been working full-time at a church and one of the most astoundingly wonderful Sunday schools in the country. Now you're available. What can you do for these folks that are listening?
Okay. Again, I'm learning some of that, but one of the things I feel like that Lifeway offers is resources. Resources from the standpoint of, obviously, curriculum and those kind of things, but resources from the standpoint of a lot of people that can help. I mean, I've met people here at Lifeway just in my 3 weeks that have been, you know, former ministers of education and those kind of things, and I've already been sitting in some of their sessions, and I'm just thinking, man, there's a lot of people here that can really help churches. So I think if nothing else, I could be the point person to help network some of that and resource that. So resources from the standpoint of the printed curriculum, if you will, but networking from the standpoint of people here who have a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of cumulative years of ministry experience here at Lifeway that I think can be used and utilized. Another thing is, you know, this Thursday, I'm actually going to be traveling to South Carolina to actually do a Sunday school conference this weekend. But on the way over, I'm going to stop Thursday. I'm having lunch with a area group of ministers of education. So I thought, since I'm going through town, I'm going to eat lunch somewhere. Why not stop and eat with those guys? So that's another thing is by being there, I'm hoping that they'll have a connection point here at Lifeway, number one, but also that they will be able to connect with others in their own area. That's going to be a strong support and help for them as well. So we're looking forward to that. I think there's some people I can help training-wise, and there's some people, they just need somebody to come alongside of them that's been there, can empathize with them. And so I want to do that as well. I love the guys out there that's doing that kind of work. They're my kind of people.
Now, so, Alan, I've heard you keynote on multiple occasions. I've mentioned you're still available to keynote at conferences and events and all that.
I sure hope so, because the last thing I want to do here is be stuck in my office all week long.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Can't thank you enough, Alan. Great stuff.
Thank you, Rick.
Challenging stuff. Incredible.
Alan Taylor is one of the favorite people that I've met in my journey here. I heard someone say about him that Alan may be wrong, but he is not uncertain.
Well, and he's seldom wrong. And he's certain because he's not wrong. And on this one, as I, you know, Brian, I never stop the thing and go, hey, let me point of personal preference. One of the great,
but you have the right. You can stop and say anytime you want.
Oh, well, look, yeah. I'm going to do it right now.
Do it.
So here's the deal. So many people want to create great group ministries, but they don't think about being a leader. It's impossible to lead something without being a leader. I often tell people when I'm doing training, when they say, you know, what's my main role? Lead. Leaders lead. That's what they do. And if a leader doesn't lead, someone will fill that vacuum with something other than leadership. And with Alan, as you can see, there's no vacuum to fill. He's got that down pat. So, this was a fantastic interview.
Yeah, I like his coach's mentality and that rules for winning. Practice fundamentals and don't beat yourself. It's a good word from Alan Taylor. So, Rick Howerton, episode 16. Are you ready to go for Tweets of the Week?
Ready to go. Tweets of the Week. Here we go.
Tweets of the Week. This is the segment of the show where we scour the Twitterverse and look for those tips, those things that are going on out in the world of groups ministry and what God is doing.
Scour.
Yeah.
Scour.
That's right.
We've been scouring.
I'll start us off. I'm going to go with Church Tech Solutions. This is at Church Tech Info, and I just like this one. It's small groups, .. the no spin zone. Hashtag small groups. It should be the place where there's no spin, where truth is spoken in love, I will add, but it's a place where we need to hear about the weightier matters and what life really is and about owning your own discipleship. There is nothing else.
Yes, sir. And in an election year, it's good to hear somebody say no spin. I like that.
Yeah. And yeah, right. So let's just embrace that for the time being, because we know this is maybe the only no-spin zone.
Yes, sir. I want to head down a path. Raul Cabrera, at Raul for People, he tweeted this. Group leaders, you do not, big letters, do not have to be small group experts to lead a group. Be you, love God, and love people. Someone wants, I get asked pretty often, actually, what is the criterion for being a group leader? And I honestly believe this is true. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. If a person does that, that's the real foundation of a great group leader. So yeah. I love Raul's tweet here.
That's one of Jesus' imperatives. If you think about the things that he actually demanded that we do, that's one of them. Kind of an interesting bent on that. Next tweet of the week is WC Church, at WC Church 1. Small groups are at least three people. Two are a date. Sign up for a small group today. Hashtag small groups at Grow Leader.
Two are a date.
That's, well,
profound.
You know, we have talked about disciple making environments on the show, and there is a trend in discipleship, which you know, where it intersects with the group's ministry towards triads and quads. So, Rick, I will ask you, is a group of three people a triad? Does that fall into the small group category?
Definitely. Yes, sir. And I think it comes back to Scripture where two or three are gathered. God is in their midst. He's at work. He's transforming. Yeah, I'm good.
All right, well, that's going to do it for Tweets of the Week this week. We're going to move on to Rick's list, which is, I'm really excited about this one. I saw this come through the wire. This is three types of new group members and how to keep them. And you're going to love these three types. And I think you're going to recognize them as well.
Well, I think they probably will. You know, every visionary group leader is thrilled when new people come to their group. And sometimes you have to ask yourself the question, does this person fall into a certain category? You don't mean to be stereotyping them. You're trying to kind of feel them out to know how to respond to them. So a couple of these sound a little negative. I don't mean for them to, but nonetheless, maybe they'll be helpful to somebody. The first type would be the hesitant hellion. Now, the hesitant hellion may be a believer or may not be a believer. This person was most likely invited by a group member and is still and maybe proudly involved in some kind of sinful activity, or maybe they don't even think about what is sin. They've come to check out the group and see if they'll be welcome just as they are. So if a group leader realizes or suspects there's a hesitant hellion, they need to be sure to speak of their own struggle with sin and thank the group for not judging you when you talk about your sin and how grateful you are to be in a group where we're all growing, but that none have arrived at perfection yet.
And sometimes just appreciate the hesitant hellion.
Oh, precisely.
For maybe a fresh perspective on life and the way people live outside the walls of the group. We forget how a lot of the world lives.
Well, let me be very vulnerable right now and just say those are my favorite people. They're willing to have a conversation about Jesus. They're willing to be in the room with a bunch of people who they think are overzealous in their radical religion, I think. But they're willing to hang in there. And those people are actually a lot of fun.
And be ready to tell other group members, hey, he doesn't know it's not okay to cuss here.
Yeah, and it may happen. Seriously, it may really
happen. It has happened, trust me.
For sure. So it sounds like you've experienced this.
Yeah, I've experienced it. Yep.
Love it.
Just roll with it.
Yeah, the second type would be the overzealous extrovert. The overzealous extrovert owns the room. From the very first engagement with the group, this person feels at home and is looking for an opportunity not just to be in the group, but to be heard by the group. You need to be certain that you engage them in the Bible study conversation as soon as possible, and sometimes when necessary, help them understand that they don't own the room too much.
I like the overzealous extrovert. That's a mouthful there.
You like that phrase, huh? Well, you might like the third one then, too. The third type person is the underzealous introvert. Let me say that again. The underzealous introvert. The underzealous introvert is simply a person who feels uncomfortable with new people or just with people. Before the meeting, after the meeting, and during snack times, be certain that you or someone else is conversing with them. And if they feel uncomfortable, and they often feel uncomfortable when others are carrying on a conversation, but they really feel uncomfortable when others are carrying on a conversation and they're standing alone or seated by themselves. They may not return to the group if you don't welcome them well. And this is a great place to find out who in your group has the gift of hospitality and give them direction that they will approach those kinds of people and make them feel welcome. They're gifted by God to do that.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. The underzealous introvert is probably the person that I would have the hardest time reaching just the way that I'm wired. I don't know what it is about that, but I'm maybe too sensitive and I'm going to say the wrong things. And it just feels like to me personally, that the barrier is bigger than what it is. So I'm really grateful for those people that, like, my wife is one and she can go and strike up a conversation, which is odd because she would describe herself as an introvert. And it may be that she recognizes that and kind of sympathizes with it.
I'm trying to remember. Do you remember how Michael Kelly, he gave us a definition for hospitality? Was it welcoming the stranger, loving the stranger, I think?
It may have been welcoming the neighbor or the stranger, yeah. Remember that? That was, it was last week, actually.
That's right. Yeah, so, you know, keeping that in mind, someone with that gift can fill that gap that guys like you and I aren't so good at filling with those kinds of people.
Yeah, and like a lot of things, if you're doing a lot of the other things in group ministry and with your group and group leadership well and some of the things that we've talked about, people in the group are going to recognize these three types and take measures to welcome them. And it's probably going to be, I would say it's going to be really interesting and affirming to see how they match themselves up. Like, I would be a lot more comfortable with the hesitant hellion or even the overzealous extrovert probably. And some other people would be more comfortable approaching that underzealous introvert.
Sure.
All right, Rick, that's great. The three types of new group members and how to keep them. Is this posted somewhere?
Yeah, it's on my blog. My blog is rickhowerton.wordpress.com.
So rickhowerton.wordpress.com. And I think most of these lists that we talk about on the show are there, so you can go print those off or find that link to forward them around. And, the email forward, the link from leaders, you guys know that's a good way just to get a touch point and maybe have a thread open with leadership and with others in the group. So that's going to be a good resource for you. Well, that's going to wrap it up for episode 16 of the Groups Matter podcast show. Rick, can you believe it's been 16?
16, exciting. Great stuff.
Yeah.
I was really excited about this conversation with Alan.
And thank you for you guys, listeners may or may not know, Rick is responsible for a lot of the guests that we have on the show. And every one of these guys has brought a particular nuance or group life and spoken with a lot of experience and intelligence and passion into these areas. So, Rick, just thanks for everything that you're doing there. And Alan today was, he's just great. He's just great. And we didn't mention it earlier, but his email is alan.taylor@lifeway.com. And I'm sure he'd love to hear from you. And he is available, is my understanding, to come and speak to your groups.
Yeah, and he spells his name, there's so many different spellings for Alan. It's allan.taylor.com.
Yeah, common spelling of Taylor, Allan. So, Rick, once again, thanks, and we'll look forward to being with you guys on episode 17 next week.